The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our author event series, recorded live at the Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, the Central Library Expansion Project, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Ashley Primus. I am the food and lifestyle editor at Philadelphia Magazine. I wanted to welcome everyone tonight to come out on this historic day that is the Free Library interview with Mark Vetri. We have just a bit of a programming note, about 30 minutes of Q&A with Mark and I. I'll open up the floor to questions. We'll have a couple of people walking around with microphones. Raise your hand if you have a question. I'll call on you. You can ask, and Mark will fire away. And then Mark will be signing his cookbook upstairs when you walked in where there was a table with all the books. And now to introduce our guest of the evening, Mark Vetri. He is the chef owner of Vetri and Osteria, two of Philly's great restaurants. A darling of the national press. Just this month, he was in GQ and Gourmet magazine. He is the 2005 winner of the James Beard Mid-Atlantic Chef Award, which is a very esteemed honor. And most important to us, he is an Abington native and a Center City resident. And we're here to discuss his book, Il Viaggio di Vetri. And I welcome Mark Vetri.
All right, so I have to pull this in. Is this okay?
Can everyone hear us?
A little more? All right.
Can everyone hear us?
Hey, here we are.
Good. Okay. Since we're here to talk about your cookbook, we'll start with your cookbook.
Yes, we are.
When I read the cookbook, one of the things that struck me the most about it is that this cookbook about you was organized through the people surrounding you.
The ones in Italy and everything like that.
The ones in Italy, and sure. You kind of told your story through them. So can you talk about kind of how you came to the idea of that's the way you wanted to organize it, and that's how the best way to tell your story?
Sure. We actually started writing it about five or six years ago, and I actually wanted to write it more about the recipes and maybe some of our, the weekend the menus that we actually have all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually started writing it about that and nobody was really into it. They were all like, yeah, nobody wants to see, nobody wants to see that about the menus. Nobody's really into the whole chef thing right now, So then the years actually went on, and then I was like, well, why don't we write something about pasta, And they were all like, single subject cookbook. Nobody likes a single subject cookbook.
You have tough people around you.
I know. I was like, Jesus Christ. I mean, that's what we do. And then I actually started thinking about it a little bit, and we had went to Italy, and I was just kind of hanging out with everybody over there, and we were out one evening, and I was just kind of looking at everyone, and we were just kind of laughing with all the guys who were in there. And
they're all very cute, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Well, yes, they are. Yes, they are.
And Italian.
Yeah. Yeah. now I'm like lost in the moment.
Sorry.
So I was actually thinking, these are the guys, who have really they inspired me to really open up the restaurant, to work the way that I actually work, to do everything. Why not? Why not tell that story? And obviously we're going to have the recipes in there, but there's All the agents wanted me to write, like, the Vetri cookbook or, you know. And I was like, I don't want to write, the recipe book with, your app section and your this section and, your that section. So I kind of came up with this whole story and, to highlight the guys in Italy and to kind of start the story off, because everyone's always asked me, where did you learn? Where did you go to school? What did you do? How did you do this? So I more or less told the story throughout the book with the rest of the piece in there.
Got it.
More pasta, always more pasta. Always more pasta. Absolutely, no, you're absolutely right. Christ, we got a heckler out here already. Jesus Christ.
We can see, the lights aren't that bright up here.
Right.
Speaking of other people in your world, you have a cookbook with other chefs on it. Can you tell us who they are and kind of?
Yes, one is the one on the left is Michael Solomonov,
and he's
owns Zahav. The one on the to his right is actually Denicio Jimenez. He owns Zochi, and the one all the way on the right is that man right there. Stand up, Joey Baldino, everybody.
Yeah.
And he he's been actually working with me for about eight or nine years now. Started off as a waiter, then actually went to cooking school. And then he kind of worked around a little bit, and then he started working for us again. And he actually opened up the osteria with us, and actually now he's leaving for Italy for a little while, and he'll hopefully own his own restaurant soon someday.
Well, what was the idea to kind of like what necessarily do these guys mean to you, and what was the idea to put them back
around? The publisher, they wanted to stick a big spaghetti lobster right on the cover, and I was like, I'm not sticking spaghetti lobster on my cover, and I was like, look at the Olive Garden cookbook, look at this, and they were like, no, you have to have this, in the book. So we kind of, we actually kind of wrestled around for a little while, and the guy who actually did all the photos for the book, he also did the photos for the website years ago, and so when he kind of mailed them everything for the book, he also added in all of the photos from years ago, and that was actually one of them.
Oh,
and when everybody looked at that, they just went, they just went nuts. They were like, "This is the shot! This is the shot! Everything is kind of symmetrical." And the photo really, tells a story. Just by looking at it, it really fits the book, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So it actually worked out well.
And these guys have all worked for you at some point or another.
Dinicio, he opened up Vetri with me. He was, he was about 2 weeks in America from Mexico. He started off washing dishes for me. Then, about a year later, started working the app station. Then, through 10 years, he kind of worked every station on the line. I sponsored him for his for his legalization cards, and now he owns his own restaurant. You know, it's the American dream.
It's the American dream, but it's Mark Vetri's way to help young chefs kind of go out on their own. You encourage them
sure,
to kind of do
yeah.
their own thing, and you've made your mark in the Philadelphia food scene because of it.
Okay.
I mean, so you kick these guys out after a couple of years, tell them to go out on their own?
Well, you know, that was the idea. Now, that's not the idea now because, you know, we open up this other restaurant, so we need, you know, so we actually want to hold on to the good guys now. but the way, you know, I mean, the way it actually was is, I mean, I was the chef, you know, so, you know, once they were there for 2 years, I mean, you know, where were, you know, there was really no, you know, I was never going to, like, name anybody, you know, the chef.
You weren't
going to
change
it. So I was like, listen, you know, get the hell out of here. Do something. You
know? Vetri Salamanov,
yeah,
Jimenez.
That wasn't going to work. But, you know, so they all, basically, 2 years was you know, kind of my thing, you know. You know, you got to really spend 2 years anywhere to really kind of learn and to absorb everything. And, you know, that was the formula back then.
Well, thank you, because we have a lot of good restaurants. Because
yeah, we do. Yeah.
In your cookbook, you write that one of the things that you learned in Italy was to treat food with respect. What does that
did
mean?
I say that?
You did say that.
All right. Okay. No, it's, you know, there's a lot of, you know, the industry now is not what it, you know, I mean, I think that everybody says that, you know. Years ago, we used to do stuff like this, and, you know, but I think that not enough young cooks now really take the time to kind of learn about what they're, you know, what they're actually making. You know, they want to learn about, you know, the latest, you know, chemicals that, you know, they want to learn about, you know, this whole new sous vide kind of, you know, thing. But if you ask them to make, you know, make your hamburger medium rare, they don't know what the hell to do. You know, so I always, you know, at the both other restaurants, we, you know, we really kind of stress on making things, you know. We order things in their like in their most natural form.
Like whole goods.
Yeah, we'll get like the whole animals in, you know, we'll get, you know, the vegetables from the farm, we'll get whole sides of this in, whole, and you know, we'll, like, you know, we'll kind of teach them, you know, like everything, you know, because you really, I don't really think that you can appreciate what you're cooking unless you really know where it comes from, you know, and that's why, you know, I kind of send them all to Italy, you know, to go work at the butcher houses and, you know, to go work on the farms and, you know, to really understand, like, what is, I mean, you know, I mean, even, you know, from the littlest thing, where does this, you know, where does this mushroom come from? Like, you know, why does it, you know, why does it grow there? What is it all about? You know, and then you really have you're really on a different level of understanding. You know, you'll think about things before you waste them. You'll have a certain amount of, you know, you'll have a certain amount of respect for what you're cooking.
That makes sense. Speaking of all these wonderful things that you do, how do you find the time to kind of slow down, test recipes, develop them for this book, think about all the things you're doing, and also own and operate and cook at two different restaurants? Plus, he's got two kids and a wife.
Wife, two kids.
Interviews at the Free Library.
And a big mastiff, big giant dog. You know, you just you just have to balance things. I mean, you know, I like my lifestyle has always, you know, like we work like they work in Italy, and I always like that. You know, you know like in Italy you go to work at 9 o'clock. You know, you get everything ready for lunch. You work lunch, 2:30, you're off. You go home, you nap, whatever, and you go back in. I mean, in Italy they eat a lot. They eat at like at 8:30, 9 o'clock. So you go in at 7:30. But here, I mean, I like to wake up early. You know, I'll go work out, go do yoga or something. And excuse me. So then I'll actually stop in the restaurant, and you know we'll have the meetings with the other chefs, and we'll kind of go over food, or I'll respond to emails, or I'll do something. I mean it's actually nice to go there in the mornings when there's actually nobody there, to just kind of look over things. I'll just walk around the restaurant and I'll just look at it, just for thoughts. And then at 1 o'clock I'll go home, and I'll kind of hang out with my wife, my little ones, and have a nice relaxing afternoon. I mean, it's not always relaxing. Sometimes you're sick, and sometimes there's other stuff going on where we have to stay the whole day. But I don't find it like it's work. Like we work a lot of hours in the industry, but it's not like you wake up and you're like, oh, I got to go to work. We still look forward to it, and I guess once I stop looking forward to it is kind of when you have to think about stopping. But we're still having a lot of fun, and everyone's like, we're excited. Let's meet early to make sausage. Everyone's still excited about it. So,
well, that's good. You talk about in your book the kind of concept of media people like myself claiming that things are the best or you're the best. And you tell a great story about how, one of the best things that you ever had was an arancini tied to the experience of it all, and that you that's something you do at your restaurants. Talk a little bit about just kind of how important the experiences is, the atmosphere, you being in slicing meat and making cappuccinos in the middle of the restaurant while dinner service is going on. And
everybody likes to label things, I think. Like this is the best and this is that. But there's really nothing that's the best. I mean what's
except for
the best of Philly. That's the best magazine in Philly. I mean, other than that though, what's really the best? I mean, seriously, it's the best for you at that, at that moment, maybe next week, it's not going to be the best for you. Maybe it'll be the best for somebody else, So to label, this is the best pasta, or this is, you know, the best. It's not, it really doesn't, I mean, it doesn't really mean anything, you know. You know, I kind of look at things like, you know, we want to, you know, like everyone who eats at the restaurants on any evening, you know, they're going to need something, you know, separate from the other guy who's eating there that evening, you know, and we have to recognize that and to let this guy have the service he needs and the experience he needs, and let this other one have the one that they need, you know. So it's our, you know, so it's our responsibility to recognize that. And that's, I mean, the food's the food, you know. The food's great, you know. It's good food, you know. We know, you know, we're just, the food's wonderful. We've been working at this for a lot of years now. You know, we know how to cook. But you know, that's only half of the experience. You know, there's a whole other half that you know needs to be watched. You know, and I guess, does that answer the question?
It definitely answers.
I don't know. I'm rambling.
Well, I think. And we had talked about this before, but, you know, the fact that people kind of come to your restaurant with their experience, it happens naturally. You know, you don't necessarily play favorites. And GQ this month named Vetri the best Italian restaurant in America.
Thank you. That was Alan Richmond. He really doesn't know what he's talking about. It's crazy.
But I know that you know, you don't play favorites. You kind of don't play that game. You let everyone kind of come to and have their own experience.
Yeah, they have to, you know. They have to have their own experience. It's the advantage that, you know, we have at Vetri over a lot of other restaurants is, you know, we have 35 seats. We're really able to look at what you know you guys need for the evening. You know, when you have your anniversary there, you know, and we'll make you whatever, you know. We'll make you an 8-course meal. We'll make you a, you know, whatever you want. My thinking is that I don't want you to remember 5 years from now, you know, what did we eat that night? You know, you're going to remember, like, oh, you know what? Where did we have our anniversary five years ago? Oh, you know, we had it with Mark over at his restaurant. That was a really nice evening. You know, yeah, maybe you'll remember. You know, you had the spinach gnocchi, but you know, the odds are you're going to be saying, oh, you know what? We spent the evening with Mark and Jeff, and that was a nice evening. You know, and that's you know, the more important thing to remember. You know, you're not about, you know, what you ate. You ate something good. You ate something not. You know, that ought to coincide with the meal. But you know, that's not the most important part of the meal.
So Vetri is 35 seats.
Vetri's 35 seats.
And Osteria.
120.
So how hard is it to keep that same mentality in a bigger restaurant and a second restaurant?
It's a little bit harder. We have an awesome chef over there who's like, you know, who's really, really knows how to cook. The food, I've actually often said that, you know, you could really switch the menus. You know, I mean, yeah, there's a there's always a couple things that you know that are a little bit more refined over at Vetri, because we have the ability to make things a little bit more a little bit more refined. But you could really switch the menus, and you would never know where you're eating. The issue is again the ambiance. The osteria is more to go out for an evening. You're having some fun. You get a bunch of friends together. You can be a little bit louder. You can laugh. You can
pizza.
Yeah, you can have some. We have the wood oven there. You can eat the pizza. That's more that style. It's like when you're in Italy with with all your with all your friends, you can just kind of stop in to osteria or to an osteria. Whereas Vetri is like it's the anniversary night. It's the celebrate something night. It's the
And I'm assuming Vetri opened 10 years ago? About 10 years ago?
Yeah, 1998, so.
Okay. I'm imagining in that time you've gotten many offers to expand your little empire.
A couple here and there.
Can we break any news right now? Anything else in the works?
You know what? We cannot break anything. I know there was an article. It was in Michael
Klein's.
Michael Klein's.
I saw that.
Did you see that? Yes. Yeah, he's been hounding me for the last month.
Like, dude, what's going on?
I know. I don't have anything. I don't have anything signed. We would like to open up a kind of an Italian, like a little trattoria. And we're talking to obviously the hotel, and we're talking to some others, but times are tough, man.
Yeah.
the banks are maybe not loaning money right now.
You're staying in Philly?
They're having issues. Yeah, we're staying in Philly.
Okay.
Yeah, we looked at the Vegas thing, and we looked at the Atlantic City thing, and it's just not for us.
Not for you. Well, I'm assuming because you're possibly thinking of a third. The restaurant and the Philadelphia diner has definitely embraced you guys. What do you, people don't always have the best things to say about us as eaters,
They don't have what? I'm sorry.
The best things to say about Philadelphians as eaters. How have you found?
I don't understand that at all. There's always the writers there who are always like, Vetri's is it's almost as good as like the real good restaurants in like New York City. Wow, we're that awesome. That's incredible. I mean, it's like all the same. Those guys have worked for me, and I've worked for them, and we go back and forth. And that's all hype, and it's all nonsense. The Philadelphia eaters, the New York eaters, the Chicago eaters, they're all, everybody wants the same experience. All the articles, what's the best restaurant city, who knows, mm-hmm. I mean, there's awesome restaurants in every city, I don't like to, I'm just not a big fan of like, the best, I mean, unless I'm reading Philadelphia Magazine when they have the best issue.
Comes out in August.
Yeah. That's in August every year. It's a wonderful magazine.
One last thing I wanted to ask you about, I think because we're getting close to timing, is you're highly involved in charities.
Sure.
And especially Alex's Lemonade Stand. You do this great fundraiser every year, and
yes.
I don't know if you just want to talk a little bit about, I must admit,
sure.
I saw Mark kind of well up, speaking of, it's not a for publicity stunt, his involvement. He's very emotional about it all.
Well, I mean, we actually started this Alex's Lemonade Stand about five years ago, and obviously everybody knows, you know, the story about Alex Scott, and you know, 5 or 6 years ago, you know, we became very, very, very friendly with her mom and dad, Liz and Jay Scott, and you know, we decided to have a night at the restaurant to benefit Alex's Lemonade Stand, and we became a little bit more friendly with them, and so the following year we decided to do a little bit larger of an event at the restaurant school, and we invited a bunch of local some local chefs, and then we opened up, you know, the other restaurant, Osteria, and it's actually one of those things when you're not married, and, you know, you don't have any kids, you know, you're like, oh wow, you know, that's really sad, but then, you know, when you start having little ones and, you know, the whole thing, it actually kind of takes on another, you know, it just kind of moves it to the next level, and, you know, so we've really started to make that our special cause, and so this is our 4th year of the Alex's Lemonade Stand event at Osteria, and this year we have 28 chefs coming from around the nation. We have a bunch of the Iron Chefs coming. I mean, it's going to be a really cool event. We shut down Broad Street. You know, we're going to have like 600 or 700 people there, and last year we raised about $150,000 for the research, and this year we hope to raise a little bit more.
When is that, in the summer?
Yeah, it's June 17th. It's a Wednesday night. It's always a Wednesday. But, you know, it's just our, you know, it's just our way of kind of doing what we're able to help out. You know, I think everybody should really do their part when they're able to.
Okay. All right, that's it for me.
Thank you. All right, let her rip.
Are you just holding the microphone? Okay. We have a question back there.
Thanks. I wondered how the growth or the resurgence of good quality local food sources has changed how you source food in this area.
I mean, we've always really used the locals a lot. You know, there's obviously a lot of local farms, and you always want to forge relationships with the locals, and and really, use all of their, choose all of their products. Lately, obviously, there's more and more stuff available. So we're always taking advantage of it. A lot of restaurants are kind of making their, you know, kind of name with, you know, we use local this, and you really have to nowadays. It's not like an option.
It's just the best stuff.
It's not even that. You know, you're going to actually, you can actually spend more, you know, for some of these local things, you know, because they're smaller farmers and you know, and they don't have the wherewithal to get hundreds of this, you know, they're out there by hand, and they have to make a certain amount of money, and you know, so you're not saving any money by using them, but you know, you're helping out, you know, the local guy, you know, so that's always, I mean, and you know, they're really working, you know, once you develop a relationship with them, they're working hard for you, you know. And we have, you know, we have this one guy who, you know, he just comes down with, like, you know, he's like, what do you want me to grow for you? What do you want me to grow? I want to work with you guys. And he'll just, I mean, he'll make whatever we want, you know. And it's, I mean, that's actually nice to have that available to you. Is that okay? All right. Good answer.
Do you have a question?
How do you develop your menus and your recipes? Tonight we were at Osteria, and there was a grandma's recipe on the menu.
There was a what on the menu?
A grandma's recipe. Somebody who works there with the rabbit and the polenta and whatnot. Do you get a lot of your recipes from?
The chef's mother.
Right.
We whenever we're in Italy, we obviously eat out, but honestly, you know, we eat at all these restaurants, these high end restaurants, and then we have like one meal at, like, you know, my friend's mother's aunt's house, and they make this rabbit for it, and like, that's the best thing ever, you know, like, you know, to hell with all this other stuff, and he's like, let me have that recipe, you know, and that's actually the one we end up, you know, sticking on the menu. But you know, you read, and you look at all these cookbooks, and you know, you're not like taking things out of them, but you're looking at them and you're saying, oh, you know what, you know they made this, you know, with this, maybe, you know, we have this awesome something else, maybe we can use that, you know, in this kind of style, and you know, so you just learn, and you know you work with some of the things, and you bounce things off of one another, and it works. Yeah. Microphone, please.
Do you have any advice for an aspiring young foodie trying to get into the industry?
Stay out. You know, anyone who's like, you know, who's actually young, starting off, and they want to get in the industry. The reality is, you know, just work hard. You know, you're not going to make a lot of money. You might not make any money for a while. I think one of my friends was interviewed once, and they asked him that, and I don't actually remember who it actually was, but he said, you know, work for 10 years without any regard for money or the hours that you're actually sticking in. And then maybe you'll get somewhere, you know. But you know, that's, you know, the reality of it. You know, a lot of these young cooks look at, you know, the Food Network, and you know, oh my God, look at the chef. You know, he's like, hi guys, how you doing? You know, and that's not not the reality of it. You know, the reality of it, it's, you know, it's a lot of hours. It's a lot of hard, you know, it's a lot of hard work. You know, so again, stay out of it.
Now, you didn't go to culinary school, right?
I did not go to culinary school. No.
Right.
I went to Drexel University. Marketing and Finance, 1990.
And you actually wanted to be a rock star, is that right?
Yeah, and then I went out to L.A. to go to music school. Hollywood Boulevard. Yes.
Yes.
Do you ever allow students, culinary students, to do any internships?
Sure, always. Sure. I mean, always. I mean, anyone who sends a resume over or who... Or actually stops in, you know. We'll set it up with them. You can, you know, we're always, you know, we're always. I mean, anyone who wants to work and can work. We have stages almost. We have them almost every night at the both of the restaurants. It's not a problem. I mean, you know, you want to stop. You know, it's just either. You can email your resume or you can stop in and, most of the guys who we end up, you know, who end up hiring are, you know, the guys who have kind of stopped in and they'll work one night a week or, you know, I mean, that's when we're looking for someone, we're always looking, we're always thinking, hey, you know, this guy's been stopping around. He's okay. He's, you know, why don't we let him have a shot at it? Sure.
For your first outpost, Beyond Vetri, you made a rather daring geographical choice.
Geographical choice, yes.
What factors motivated you to choose that location?
I get asked that a lot. And the only thing that I can really say is for me, you know, when I went to look at it, and I've looked at a lot of restaurants over the last 10 years, and I just looked at that area, and after I actually looked at the actual space, I just kind of took a walk up, you know, like up Mount Vernon Street to North Street to Green Street to Wall Street, and I saw all these homes, you know, with, you know, that were single family homes. And I just walked down to City Hall from there. And it was like nine minutes. I didn't really think that it was like this nutty thing. Everyone else did. And, oh, he's crazy. He's going to North Broad Street. What's gotten into him? But I mean, when you actually think about it, you know, you can roll right up there. You don't have to, you don't have to pay $20, to get valeted. You know, you just leave your car right outside, walk inside, and the odds are, nobody's going to, nobody's going to smash your windshield that often. So, every now and then. But you know what the reality is? We've had more stuff happen outside Vetri than we have had outside the Osteria over the last year and a half. You know, we've had more nonsense happen, more more vandalism, more, I mean, you know, more everything. So it's, I mean, it's not such a bad area.
Now, you're South Philadelphia born and raised. Do you...
No, I'm not,
No?
From Abington.
Okay. I've read lies.
My father's from South Philadelphia.
Regardless,
yeah.
Do you find it
Somebody
at all...
I wrote that wrong, though. It was in an article recently.
Not Philadelphia Magazine.
Do you find it bizarre... Do you find it bizarre to be a food celebrity of sorts? And when did you realize that had happened to you?
I find it really weird, actually. Yeah, I mean, you know, like, I'm just making ravioli, man. I don't know. I mean, it's like, you know, this whole, like, thing about, you know, like, oh, my God, you know, wow, it's incredible. I mean, it's a little strange. You know, I don't know. You know what? I have no answer for you. I have no idea what to say. I don't know. It is really just a little bit, you know, it's just a little bit surreal. I'm able to wake up every morning. I love to go to work. You know, I have a lot of fun, and you know, people seem to have a lot of, you know, they have a lot of respect for that. The fact that they hold me up there as this, you know, as like one of the number one. The number one guys in the in the nation. I mean, that's actually really nice, and it's also really flattering. But it never really will like make any sense for me, you know, because it was never what I actually went after. You know, I just wanted to open up, you know, the restaurant. You know, that was always what I loved, and I don't know. What can I tell you? I don't know.
Here and then there.
I'm curious what restaurants you like to eat in Philadelphia.
What restaurants? I love to go to Morimoto. For sushi, I love to go to Zahav. Michael Solomonov is on the book. We go to Mellow Grana. We like it there. That's in the neighborhood. Where else do we go? I love to go to Faux 75 for soup, lunch. It's like, you know, we have lunch there like once a week. It's the best. It's on Washington Avenue. It's in that little, like, you know, the mall there. You know, you can eat there in like 30 seconds. You know, they serve, there's your soup. You order, it's like, there's your soup. So we like to go, you know, we always like to have a steak sandwich, you know. I don't know. I mean, there's others, but I'm just, you know, they got me on the spot there. You know, I mean, I don't want to leave out anybody, but I don't know. Where can I go? I don't know. If I think of anywhere else while we're doing it, I'll just kind of shout it out.
Someone over here have a question before? No? Yes.
I'll do it without the mic. We had the pleasure of waiting in line with your parents for the flight from Madrid to Philadelphia.
Ah.
They told you about that.
Yes, yes, they did.
And without any offense, men, they don't appear to be, you know, chef-oriented.
No, people. God, they're not. I've... You know, I've often said my father would never eat at the restaurant if I didn't own it, you know, because he's like, you know, he's the guy who's like, you know, it's like that, you know, it's like that big, you know. You know, when we opened the restaurant, you know, he was, you know, he wanted to kind of to help out a little bit, and you know, he would all, you know, he would kind of send everyone in, and you know, but he, you know, and we would always kind of notice when, you know, when he would kind of mention things to them, to those who were eating there. One time, you know, the afternoon, you know, he asked me, he's like, "How large is that lamb that you're serving?" I was like, "Oh, you know, we let them have, I don't know, three racks or so." He's like, "Oh, okay, fine." Then that evening, one of his friends was in, and they asked me, what should we order? And I said, "Oh, the lamb's awesome." He said, "Oh no, your father said I shouldn't order that. That's not big enough." Like, oh, okay, that's great. Yeah, you know, they're, you know, but they love the restaurants, but you know, they're actually, you know, now that they're actually living in the city, they're eating out a lot, and you know, they're becoming, well, I should say my mom's becoming much more sophisticated. My father will never become sophisticated. Is he here? They said they were coming, but I guess they didn't make it. He's home eating a Wawa sub. Which I love, by the way. Wawa meatball subs. Hands down, the best. Wawa.
Okay, one more question.
Or no more questions, yes.
Sort of in that vein, what do you think accounts for the broad-based appeal of Italian food? Because there are so many people, particularly men, who don't want to try anything different and won't try ethnic cuisines, and even French might be too sauce-heavy or butter-heavy. But yet everybody is happy to eat Italian food. Why do you think that is?
You know, I think it's more so because when you actually think of it, you think of the warmth of it, you know. You don't necessarily think, oh, it's, you know, it's this kind of style. You think, wow, Italy, you know, that's warm. That kind of wraps you up. You know, I was in New York about, I don't know, four or five months ago, and I was actually talking to the editor of Food and Wine magazine, and they were like, you know, what are you working on now? What are you working on? Because we're kind of writing about, you know, we're writing about Italy now. I'm like, oh, that's awesome. They're like, yeah, you know, Italy's the next big thing. I said, oh wow, it's back, cool, you know. And the reason was that you know, now in these economic times, you know, people, they don't want to eat, you know, just for the sake of eating. You know, they don't want to eat things that don't, like, kind of touch their heart, you know. And you know, when they think of Italy, they think warm, they think of their family, And, you know, that's what they want now, you know. So it's, you know, so it's always going to be around. And, like, that's why it's always, like, the number one food. And, I mean, it always will be. You know, it's just the way it is.
Okay, that's it. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you guys very much for having me.
Thank you for listening to a podcast from the Free Library's Author Event Series. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information is available at freelibrary.org.